Hello and welcome back to the Walk Home Podcast. I'm your host, Kayla Nielsen, and super happy to have you here with me today. I'm taking the mic solo. I also pretty much already repeated all of those same lines at the beginning part of this episode because I didn't think I was going to record an intro for this episode because I was like, ah, it's a solo. I don't need to also record an intro. I knew it was already going to be kind of long, so I didn't want to talk your ear off. As I started going, I realized, oh yeah, I probably should have made this disclaimer earlier on, so I'm going to come and do that now in the intro so it cannot be missed. This is the disclaimer. In case you don't already know, I am not a doctor. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a therapist or counselor of any sort. And I am not at all recommending any person here, any person listening, anyone at all to take or to try mushrooms ever. That is not my intention with sharing. My intention of sharing my experiences is really to answer your questions that have come in over the years, but particularly over the last couple of months in the last year. People have a lot of questions about mushrooms, about microdosing, about how often I take it, what is my relationship, what are my trips like. So this is just a place for me to answer your questions and to share my experience. This is not me influencing you to take mushrooms. Have to make that super, super clear because I don't want that to be misconstrued at all. And as I mentioned, I am not a professional of any sorts other than a yoga teacher. I am not a professional, so I cannot advise you like, yes, do this for your mental health, do this for your physical health. That I don't have the credentials or the qualifications to do that. Telling you my experience and what I did for certain parts of my health. But I highly, 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 highly suggest if this is something you are considering to talk to a professional, talk to your therapist, even talk to your doctor, talk to someone in a professional field, especially if it's about your mental health, talk to a therapist or a psychologist or whoever is supporting your mental health to see if this would be a good idea for you before just being like, ah, I'm just gonna do it, fuck it. I don't recommend that. And of course, you don't have to listen to my recommendations at all, but I do just want to be very clear about that. So without further ado, here we go. We're jumping into my relationship with mushrooms. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Walk Home Podcast. I'm your host, Kayla Nielsen, and I will be taking the mic solo today for a solo episode. I'm going to be talking all about my relationship with mushrooms. Might sound kind of random, I know. However, so many of you have asked me questions about mushrooms over the last several years, and especially in the last, I would say, several months. So I thought, okay, I need to talk about this on the podcast because it is way too much for sure to fit in an Instagram caption. And it is, I mean, my relationship started a long time ago with mushrooms, and since then it has changed and evolved so much. So there's just a lot of context, a lot of nuance, and I want to just jump right into it here. So really the first thing that kind of pushed me to even have this, I want to say conversation, but I'm just talking to myself, to have this episode come out is my most recent mushroom ceremony that I participated in September, a few months ago. So everything is going to lead up to that point, okay? It was a really big ceremony. I actually didn't share anything about it. I think maybe before I partook in the ceremony, I might have mentioned something on Instagram, like, oh, I'm logging out for the day, I'm doing a mushroom ceremony, something casual like that. Otherwise, never talked about it again. So this is all going to be brand new information for anyone that is following really closely and loves the ins and outs of all of the ceremony details that I share. Haven't shared this at all. And that will soon be clarified as to why. So the other thing that I want to say is that I think, and this is just based on certain assumptions I've received or feedback I've heard, because I talk, I mean, I would say a decent amount about psychedelics, people assume that I am just eating mushrooms, taking acid, drinking ayahuasca all the freaking time. And it's funny because that could not be farther from the truth. So ayahuasca, for instance, the first time that I did an ayahuasca retreat was 2 years ago. I waited 2 years to integrate that experience before I went back again. And with mushrooms, I can actually count on one hand the amount of times in my life. I'm 33. And the first time that I took mushrooms, I don't remember exactly how old I was. I was somewhere between 16 and 18 years old. And I can count on one hand the amount of times that I've had a full dose of mushrooms. So that's, you know, that's about 15 year span counting it on one hand. Acid, I would say for sure more than mushrooms, but still not more than two hands. So in my whole lifetime. So just kind of putting it into perspective, because I talk about these things somewhat frequently and I've had some really big realizations from the ceremonies and from the experiences that I've had. So it feels really relevant in my day-to-day life. But it's important to know that these revelations also kind of come in waves. So sometimes in a ceremony or in an altered state, whatever message or download or however you want to call it, whatever comes through is crystal clear. It's just like, oh, okay, now I know this truth. That's the way that it is. Boom, everything has changed. My perspective has changed. And it is so clear. The lesson is so, so clear. And you start applying it right away. And it's something you can articulate right away. So I've had moments like that, and I have shared it immediately, whether on social media, on the podcast, in person, whatever it may be. Other times, what comes through is not as clear. And you're like, why the hell am I thinking about that? Why the hell did I see that vision? Why the hell did that happen? And as you bring all of those lessons into your day-to-day life, so as you integrate everything that you saw, everything you experienced, everything that you felt in that altered state into your day-to-day life, the lessons, the realizations, the aha moments, all of those become more clear over time. That has also happened to me a lot. So sometimes I'm reflecting on a specific ayahuasca ceremony that maybe took place a couple of years ago, but now all of a sudden just makes sense to me. And because I am a very reflective person and I love introspection and connecting the dots and just all of that, you know, personal development kind of stuff, it might seem like I am constantly taking these different psychedelics to constantly go deeper, but a lot of the times I have a few significant experiences and then I unravel and dissect them from there. For me, it's really important to have that integration time in between so that my system doesn't get overloaded. So I just want to clarify that at first. I think even just saying the amount of full mushroom ceremonies I've had, I can count on one hand is going to be, it was surprising to me. I actually had to sit down and think about it. Okay, how many times have I actually had a full dose of mushrooms? And I was surprised that I could count it on one hand because even I felt like, oh yeah, I've done it so many times. I'm so cool. Not the case. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. In high school, I started dabbling with, I'll just call them drugs, anything other than alcohol, especially after a very specific trauma that I experienced when I was 16. And after that trauma, I didn't talk to any adult about it. I didn't go to therapy. I didn't have any way to process it. I didn't have the language to process it. And I didn't want to, honestly. So really my main mechanism for what I thought was healing was numbing and escapism, specifically through drugs. So the drugs really started, I would say, the following year, around the age of 17. And in that time, there was about a one and a half year time frame where I mean, I've kind of joked about it before, but it was pretty dark. I really went off the deep end. I didn't care if I lived or died. And when you have that reckless mindset, when you're consuming anything, you know, of course, that intention of just, I just want to get as fucked up as possible. I just want to not feel. That is exactly what you'll get. And that can also bring you to a very scary place or a possible overdose, right? So I had a lot of experiences that were close to that because I was reckless and because I truly didn't care. So in that year and a half, I think I've tried probably every single drug that there is to try. I think. Probably not, actually. I don't know, because it seems like there's always new things coming out. But in that time, I never said no to anything. Okay, and I'm not saying that in a way to brag or to glorify drug use. This was, like I said, it was a dark time, and it was actually really sad. When I look back at that person who is me, that younger version of me, I just want to hug her and help her because I was, you know, I was very broken. And in that time is the first time that I tried mushrooms. However, you know, when I'm trying it with that mindset of I just want to get as fucked up as possible, so I'm also for sure drinking. There was a lot of binge drinking at that time. And probably smoking weed too, because that was, I grew up in Northern California, and culturally that's just a big part of the culture there. It's kind of, not kind of, it's definitely normalized. And if anything, it was kind of destigmatized even back then, even when it was still super illegal, but it was just more accepted. So I'm taking mushrooms with this intention of I just want to get as fucked up as possible. And that is exactly what happened. But unlike other synthetic drugs that I was taking at the time that were really easy to numb out, to escape, and sometimes the numbing was through extreme socialization and extreme partying, you know, all of that interaction with other people and dancing and staying up all night, it was still this avoidance, even though I wasn't numbing out just in a puddle by myself and isolated. It was still this tactic of avoidance and avoiding what was really there. If you've taken psychedelics, then you know they are not the kind of drug that allows you to avoid anything. If anything, it is the more that you try to avoid, the more that you try to control the way the trip goes, the more you are going to suffer and the more that thing will keep resurfacing and coming up. I didn't know any of this at the time. I just wanted to get fucked up. So when I took it with that intention, that was exactly what happened. I got super messed up, and maybe, like I said, I shouldn't say maybe. I was definitely drinking and most likely smoking. I don't know if I had taken anything else. I don't remember. So I also just was super intoxicated, but I was not able to have fun at all. It was not a social experience for me at all. And as someone who was super social when I was younger, like I said, kind of using that as a form of numbing and escapism too, that felt like torture because I was in this party setting, but I couldn't socialize because I was just so in my trip and so trying to control the trip. And it was not like anything I had ever experienced from any other drug I had experienced. And I did not like it at all. I did not have an enjoyable time. So I would say that put a very bad taste in my mouth about it. It was like, whoa, I'm never doing that again. Because all the discomfort I felt, now in hindsight, I can realize this. At the time, definitely didn't realize any of this was happening. But in hindsight, I realized, oh, I hated that because it was very confronting for me. Because it was actually the first time I felt everything. And that's exactly what I was trying to avoid doing. So I didn't touch mushrooms, didn't even think about touching mushrooms for probably about 10 more years after that, I would say. So that was, like I said, I don't remember the exact age that I was. I was somewhere between the age of 16 to 18 when I had that mushroom experience. And then the next time that I did, oh, actually, I just remembered this. So once I was in Thailand, and I think that was maybe about 7 or 8 years later with some friends. And if you've been to Thailand, then you'll know there's this place, one of the islands down there, it's a big party island, and we were there to party. Like, that was the intention of the trip. We were there for Christmas and New Year's and doing all this gross full moon stuff. And I say it's gross only because the amount of fucking trash that is all over the beach, even at the time, even in my messed up state, the ocean is literally just full of glass and plastic bottles. It was so sad. I was like, oh my God, I hate that I'm even a part of this. So that's why I say it's gross. I'm not saying the people are gross or anything like that, but just the experience, it's pretty brutal. But at the time, early 20s, we were there to party and celebrate the holidays. And there's this specific part of this specific island called Mushroom Mountain. You can go and get mushroom shakes there. It's kind of a part of the whole experience. So I did have, I don't even think I finished a whole shake, but I drank some of it. And honestly, again, I was drinking a lot. So I don't even know if I felt anything. I'm just trying to be super honest about every time I've even experienced mushrooms. But really at that time, it was more, the only reason that I guess that that's important is because it was the first time I was even open to considering mushrooms again. Because previously I was like, oh, I'm not touching those things. It's not fun. That night that I had however much of the mushroom shake, I still had fun. Like I said, I don't honestly remember it affecting me at all. But it was the first time that I was like, oh, okay, maybe mushrooms aren't so bad, because in my mind, I did still technically take them because I drank some of the shake and I had a good time. So it was like, okay, I'm open to these things, maybe. But that was it. Didn't want to seek them out, wasn't interested in them. I was probably just trying to fit in because people were doing it around me and it was like, yeah, I'm cool, I can handle mushrooms. So that was really what was going on there. Fast forward another, I think 6 or 7 years. So at this point, I'm living in the Philippines, and one of my friends told me about microdosing. And I had heard of it before. Like I said, I'm from Northern California. There's this big boom going on in Northern California, the tech industry, Silicon Valley. And I had a ton of friends living in that area and working in those industries. So I had actually heard about people in those industries microdosing LSD and mushrooms and working and being super creative. And at this point, I had also tried acid, had a really intense experience on acid because, again, my intention was just to get as fucked up as possible. And it was very confronting. I was not able to be social, all of the very similar things that happened with mushrooms. So when I heard that people were taking acid and mushrooms and then going to work, I was literally blown away. Like, how the hell do you do that? How is that possible? I couldn't even have a conversation with my best friends around me. How do you go to work and do that? I mean, clearly I had taken too much, and also clearly when I had taken those things in the past, I had been drinking and partying and taking whatever else. So big difference, but in my mind, didn't compute. But I was also kind of interested, like, okay, these people in these industries that are super successful, like there must be something there then. And I'm willing to bet that I probably didn't take them the right way the first time. So it was kind of like, that's interesting. And one of my friends was going through just kind of a tough time. I can't speak for her. I'm not sure if she was fully depressed or not, but she was going through a tough time and she told me that she started microdosing. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And she's like, yeah, I have an herbalist. She makes all of the capsules for me. Do you want to try some? And at the time, I didn't need them one way or another. It was more just out of curiosity. I wasn't going through a hard time. I wasn't in a great place. I was just kind of neutral. And I was like, okay, like I'll try them. I held on to them for a really long time because honestly, I was still scared. And at this point, this was probably about almost 15 years after that mushroom experience that I had had in high school. And I held on to them for a while. And she only gave me, I think, maybe like 5 capsules. And she just said, whenever you do take them, take one every 3 days. You're supposed to take at least 2 days in between. And, you know, that's it. She's like, you won't feel anything. It's just a true microdose, at least. When we say you don't feel anything, what she means is like you don't get high from it. You're not out and about and all of a sudden all the colors start melting into one rainbow swirl. It's not going to be like that at all. If anything, you kind of feel the expansion and the lightness that comes after it. So on those days that you're not taking anything, that's when you actually feel the effects. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. So I held on to them for a while, and then I did end up taking them eventually. But again, I didn't feel like I needed them at this point. So I'm not really sure if I felt much of anything other than just, once again, kind of opening that door again, like being open to mushrooms instead of categorizing them as, oh my God, those are terrifying and they're over there and I'm never gonna touch them again. So it was more of just kind of like this healing experience, I think, with the plant itself of, okay, I'm open to the fact that maybe you could be beneficial. And she was right. You know, I didn't feel any sort of high from it. I just felt completely peaceful and calm, but I also felt pretty peaceful and calm before I took the microdose. So who's to say if they really did anything? But it did crack the door open a little bit more. So that was around the end of 2018. And at the very end of 2018, I've shared this so many times, so I know that you guys are already familiar, but I went off of birth control, hormonal birth control, for the first time in 15 years. This is also right when my Saturn return was coming in super fucking hot, and I had a really, really hard time. So, I mean, even just chemically, the hormone imbalance and the way that my body was recalibrating after having been on birth control for 15 years was huge. I felt completely out of control. I could just feel my chemistry didn't even feel like my own. Like I felt like I was really meeting myself for the first time. And that's also a very similar feeling that most people describe in their Saturn return. So it was kind of amplified. There was that physical element going on with the hormones, but there was also the energetic stuff happening astrologically. And I was in a really dark place. I've shared this before, but on the first day of 2019, sitting on the beach in Australia, beautiful place, have a great relationship. I'm there with my great family. Like, everything is great. I'm about to film with Alo Moves for the first time, which was a huge step in my career. Everything was great around me. I just moved in with my boyfriend, and all I could think about was dying, like just fully having suicidal thoughts. And in this really, really dark place that it scared me too, because I didn't know why. Other times where I had felt this darkness, I kind of knew the source of it. And this time I couldn't understand what was going on. So that was the year that I did end up doing my first ayahuasca retreat. And just kind of, again, that door had cracked open a little bit as far as like, there's other things out there other than just yoga and meditation. And I don't want to say just yoga and meditation, like they're not that great. Obviously, I am a full believer in yoga and meditation. That is why it is a huge part of my work. However, my entire spiritual practice revolved around yoga and meditation for a really long time. Well, I would say yoga, meditation, and travel. Those were big, big teachers for me for a really long time. And in 2019, I just started exploring other modalities. I hadn't really explored other modalities before, not seriously. And I just opened up to other possibilities. I became a lot more curious about other things while also still practicing yoga and meditation and still traveling, right? So all of them were happening at once. And that was when the whole microdosing thing kind of came back into my mind. I can't remember if someone brought it up again or if I just thought of it on my own, but I was like, well, so many people have vouched for this for depression. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm just going to try it. When you are in a really dark place, I think you also have this kind of desperation. I honestly felt the exact opposite of how I felt when I was younger, where I was reckless and I didn't care if I lived or I died. I felt more like, I don't want to keep living like this. If I'm going to be here, I want to feel better than I feel right now. And I'm willing to try whatever it takes to feel better and to be better and to do better than what I'm doing and how I'm experiencing my life right now. As you probably already know, I'm a yoga teacher. And although some of you might practice with me online, I have to say that one of my absolute favorite ways to connect with you is through Glow Yoga Retreats. I founded Glow Yoga Retreats 5 years ago, not only because I love yoga and travel, but also with the intent to share holistic experiences supporting charitable initiatives worldwide. If you're interested in joining me next year, check out glowyogaretreats.com to see the epic lineup of events that we have in store. Also, I'm offering all of the pod listeners 10% off any booking. Simply use the code WALKHOME at checkout. I really hope to see you there. And I decided to start microdosing on my own. So I will say, if it is not clear already, I am not a doctor. I am not a nutritionist. I'm not a psychologist or a therapist or anything in between. I am not sitting here telling you that if you are feeling any sort of darkness or depression or anxiety or anything and everything in between that you should consider microdosing. I am not saying that at all. And I'm definitely not saying that you should do it how I did it, where I just figured it out on my own and I figured out what worked for me. I'm just telling my experience. And I mean, I'm sure I'll probably also be prefacing this whole conversation with a separate intro just to say that again, but I really just want to make that clear. So at the time, like I said, I started experimenting. I knew the way that it was supposed to go. So the way that a lot of people recommend it is you take one microdose capsule or however you're taking it, if you're taking it in a tea blend or whatever, every 3 days. So you have 2 days off in between. I didn't have a scale. I didn't know exactly how much I was taking. I didn't know a whole lot about mushrooms. I didn't know which part of the mushroom was more potent. I didn't know anything. So I really learned through trial and error. And sometimes being like, whoa, that is not a microdose. I am tripping walking down the street right now. Okay, cool. Now I know to scale back. That was really how I learned, was through trial and error. So again, don't necessarily recommend that. But at the time, I was living in a place and the pace of my life was that I was able to have that experimentation and not, you know, of course, I wasn't driving or anything at that time where I could have been a danger to myself or to anyone else. I was living in Australia at the time and just laying very low, I will say. I was pretty much walking everywhere and just having like a lot of deep introspection. So that was when things kind of started opening up again. And this was before I had even considered the ayahuasca retreat that year. And I just kind of felt called to have a full dose of mushrooms, like properly. At this point, I hadn't been drinking for a while. At this point, you know, it was not about getting as fucked up as possible. At this point, the intention was, again, I want to feel better. And I know that there is a way for me to feel better. And I know part of the reason that I feel the way that I feel right now, beyond the physical, beyond the energetic, astrological stuff, I know part of the reason I feel this way right now is because of past traumas that have not been resolved, that I have been shoving down and running away from since I was 16. And the last thing I want to do is sit with them, but I also know deep down that's what I need to do in order to get out of this loop. And so that's what I did. At the time, I was living with my boyfriend. We had a pretty small apartment, but it was still two stories. And so the upstairs were the bedrooms and the downstairs was the kitchen and the living room. And I just told him, I'm going to do this. I would like for you to be here in the apartment just so that I can, if I feel like I need to call out or something, you'll be here, but I don't want you to like be here. And he's like, okay. He had experimented with this similar kind of healing modalities and whatnot. So he was really supportive. And I just went for it on my own, guided my own experience, you know, came up with a really soothing playlist. I had candles, I had incense, I did it at nighttime. So this was also kind of interesting because this was before I had done my first ayahuasca retreat, and the Shipibo lineage of ayahuasca ceremonies that I have been a part of are always at nighttime. And in the jungle, the nighttime there is completely pitch black unless the moon is full. So you're really just in the dark. And that's kind of part of the healing that they work with, is sitting in the dark, more or less in silence with yourself and just sitting in your shit, trudging through the shit. And there's something for me with that feeling of being in the darkness that has this very cocoon-like energy. Like sometimes it can be scary, of course, because it's dark, but for me it feels some ways safer. I don't feel quite as exposed. Also, I can't see as much. Sometimes the colors and all those things can be so overwhelming, so when it's light out, it becomes even more amplified. So there was something about me that just gravitated towards doing this in the dark by myself in this apartment. And didn't know a whole lot about ceremony at this point. Hadn't been in a whole lot of ceremonies. I had been in a few cacao ceremonies and, you know, of course, different rituals and things for yoga and teacher training type of things and meditations, but not a plant medicine ceremony like this. And definitely not by myself. And I just kind of intuitively went for it, created a really comfortable space and just held the space for myself, but also had the, like I said, the reassurance of knowing there is someone just upstairs who is not altered at all, that if I really feel like, hey, I need to call out, I need a hug, I'm scared, something is happening, he can come down and be with me. So that was really reassuring for me as well. And I went through this whole experience. So this was before ayahuasca, before I even knew I was going to Peru or had an inkling about wanting to do ayahuasca. And the experience that I had now that I have had ayahuasca ceremonies was so similar. And if you've listened to my episodes about my ayahuasca experiences, then you'll know that. So now I've drunk ayahuasca 7 times, and in those 7 times, I still have never thrown up. which is a little unusual. I mean, I'm sure there's tons of other people out there that can say the same, but after seven times, you would think, come on, this person is going to puke at this point. I've had other purges and other releases, but it's just never come out in the form of throwing up. With mushrooms, I almost always purge and throw up. And even that night, that's exactly what happened. Similar to the way that people talk about it with ayahuasca, to where it's not like, oh, I feel sick and now I'm throwing up. It's more like this thing is coming out of you that you've been holding on to, and it's a real release, an emotional release. And if anything, it feels good. It is the same way that a purge feels good. It feels like that deep release is happening. But at the time, I was a little freaked out because I didn't know anything about any of this. I didn't know that even purging, I probably didn't even have that vocabulary. I didn't know that that was common. I didn't know that that could happen. And I think that, you know, the way that so many people talk about mushrooms, at least in my experience, it's been very casual. And I don't know if that's because, at least here in the States, and in some states they already are on the fast track to being legalized next, or they're already decriminalized, right? And so there's just like this casual nature to them, like, oh yeah, it's just mushrooms, kind of similar to how people used to be about weed before. It's just weed. And so because of that casual nature, and because they're natural, right? There's this other thing of people being like, yeah, it's just natural, so it's fine. And I'm like, hello, ayahuasca is natural. Iboga is natural. These are, peyote is natural. These are the most intense psychedelics you can do, and they are 100% natural. Just because something is natural doesn't mean it's not potent as hell. So there's something about, in my experience, that I had this same kind of casual mentality around mushrooms because that's what I had sort of absorbed from everyone else. And I felt like, oh, it's just supposed to be, yes, you trip, and it can be, if you take too much, it can be scary or this and that. But I didn't realize that for me, particularly, that mushrooms are sometimes, even still now, more intense for me than ayahuasca. And I want to make that clear because I'm sure that there's a lot of you out there that might have had the similar experience to me where people talk about mushrooms very casually. And I think especially nowadays, because of the microdosing movement, it's even more casual. And if you're someone that's super sensitive like me and you have strong reactions to psychedelics, you might be thinking like, what is happening? What is wrong with me? These are not casual. No, they're not casual. They are strong. They are potent. You don't need a lot. These are all things that I didn't know. And like I said, I learned through trial and error, which worked for me. But at that time, for instance, when I'm purging, I didn't know that that was even a thing with any psychedelics, but let alone with mushrooms. I'd never heard people talking about that before. I knew, you know, in my experience, like I said, it did feel good after I felt this release and I was going through this really intense but beautiful trip alone. And there was this deep sense of peace and comfort and confidence that came from doing it alone. But I still, after, was kind of like, whoa, I don't fully know what just happened. But also, I trust the shit out of it because whatever just happened rewired something. Like, I feel significantly, even though it was hard, and even though I had to go through and live through some things again that I would rather not keep thinking about and that I would rather forget. So it was hard. But the feeling after is like, whoa, it was so worth it. And this feeling of, oh, there's actually this really deep wisdom in my body, first of all, and also beyond my body, in this plant, in, you know, these really intelligent medicines or plants that are out there, and just feeling like something greater was happening. So that creaked open the door, as you can imagine, quite a bit more. Didn't fully understand how to make the most sense of it, but it still was, it was just incredibly, incredibly powerful. And a few months after that is when I went to Peru and did my first ayahuasca ceremony. So a lot of people also say this, that after you do ayahuasca, if you ever take any kind of psychedelic again, the experience is going to be really intense. Because I don't know if there is a scientific reason for this, but this is just what I've heard and also what I've experienced. It's kind of like once your brain has that level of trip that you have with ayahuasca, it can't really just have mellow trips anymore. I don't know if that's true, but there does seem to be like something that amplifies after you've had a really big experience with a master medicine like ayahuasca. And then if you go back to something that maybe isn't a master teacher, then you still have these really big experiences. But I also just wanted to clarify, you know, that mushroom trip where I'm purging and having all of those very ayahuasca-esque experiences was before I had ever drunk ayahuasca. So it can be just as powerful whether or not you're working with, you know, these big grandmother, grandfather medicines or not. And okay, so that was the second time, only the second time that I had had a full dose of mushrooms. The first time was in high school, horrible experience. The second time, full dose, was then. And in between that time too is when I was doing the experimenting with microdosing. So microdosing, you know, I've done more times than I can ever even think of keeping track of. But again, those experiences are not, you're not tripping. You're not getting high from it. You're not really feeling this altered state. The feeling that you get is more in those pauses where you feel like, ah, there's some expansion, something unlocked. And I personally never really went about it the way that was recommended. Like I said, once every 3 days and take exactly this much. And again, not saying I recommend this or not, but in my experience, a huge part of all psychedelics has really been about softening and trusting. And for me, that they're very heart-centered. And a lot of what comes up is very, those are kind of qualities of the feminine, you know, more intuitive, a little bit softer, a little bit less rigid, a little bit less structured, and really leaning into wisdom over intelligence. So what I mean is that when I have microdosed in the past, I haven't had a set schedule of like, okay, this is exactly how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it for this long. And then on this date, I'm going to stop. My body has been so clear with me throughout the past couple of years that I've been doing this, and it will very clearly tell me, even if I've been doing it consistently for several months, all of a sudden one day it's like, nope, no more. Okay, cool. And then maybe not again for 6 months to a year. And I just trust that. And I will say, you know, there have definitely been times that my mind has got in the way and my ego has gotten in the way to where I'm like, oh no, no, like I should, you know, if I just take a little bit of this, then I know this will help. And that's when it bitch slaps me. It puts me in my place and it's like, no, you're not listening. You're not getting still. You're not softening. You're not listening to the wisdom of your body or the wisdom of your plant. You're trying to power through with the ego, or you're trying to power through with the logistic intelligence of the mind. And that really, for me, is not my purpose when I'm working with any plant medicine. And I will pay for it when I do that. So that's going to come up real soon. And this is a very important lesson to everyone, which is why I just have to put myself on blast so you can understand. Okay, so I do the ayahuasca retreat. When I'm in Peru is when I have my third mushroom ceremony. And this one was really powerful once again, but for a totally different reason. So what I've realized, again, this is more in hindsight, didn't realize it at the time, but what I've realized is that with psychedelics and especially mushrooms, as I've mentioned, even from that first time in high school, not a social experience for me. It's not something that I can take and party and be interactive, even with the closest people around me. And part of that is because it is so confronting. I feel like I am completely stripped naked. I feel so vulnerable. I feel like everything about me is exposed. So first sitting with myself in that state of I am stripped naked, I am exposed, not literally, you know, but more in the mind's eye and energetically, is a level of comfort that I was not even at with myself. So sharing that with someone else, even someone I'm super close to, was like excruciating to be that exposed in front of anyone, even if they were not even aware, right? Because they might not even be aware of how exposed I'm feeling and how exposed I am in that state. Even if they're not aware, just me being in the presence of someone else literally felt excruciating. So first for me, it really took getting comfortable with myself in that state and loving myself in that state first. And this third ceremony that I did was the first time, and I only realized this not just in hindsight, but like today, as I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about on this episode, I realized, oh my God, this is the only time I've gone through any mushroom ceremony with someone ever. And so that was really, you know, that was really a huge part of the healing that occurred, because it was allowing myself to be vulnerable in front of someone else that way. So as I mentioned before, you know, if you're someone that tends to purge with mushrooms, or if mushrooms tend to be, for me, I almost always have to kind of go through the darkness first. A lot of it is revolved around specific past traumas that are difficult for me to sit in and to relive. I might be kind of like writhing around, and it is uncomfortable. It's not nice to look at. It's not nice to be around. And then there's also this part of me that is still aware of what is happening. And I'm like, oh, I know I look, you know, really uncomfortable right now, or I'm crying right now, or I look like I'm in pain, and I don't want to draw attention to myself, and I don't want this person to feel uncomfortable. So I can't fully be in that experience of the discomfort. And because I'm kind of half in and half out, that's actually causing more suffering for me. So these are all the reasons why I'm like, I would rather just be alone, because then I don't have to worry about anyone else's feelings. I don't have to worry if I'm making anyone else feel uncomfortable, when, I mean, ultimately, I don't have to worry about that anyways, but it just feels so in me to want to make sure everyone else is okay, and then I can go not be okay, right? And doing this ceremony with someone who also I had only just met, and this is someone, I mean, I want to bring him on the podcast, I think, we'll see, at some point, because we have this whole long story that's too much to lead up. It's too much to explain in this podcast. You're probably like, wait, what? What's happening? But at the time, we had only just met a few weeks prior. We actually met on my ayahuasca retreat. After this experience, we ended up dating for a while. So the reason I haven't really talked about this a lot is because I really do not want anyone to hear this and think like, oh, I'm going to go to an ayahuasca retreat and meet someone. Like, that is not the vibe. That is not a recommendation at all. And 150 million percent, neither him or I was going to that retreat looking for what we found in each other at all. And if you've heard anything about my first ayahuasca retreat, you'll know there was zero sexy factor to it. Like, I had a flesh-eating fucking parasite on the back of my leg. My leg was rotting off. That's not a joke. The smell of my skin was so disgusting because it was being eaten away by a flesh-eating parasite. And I have to laugh about this now because it's just so ridiculous. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. I was pissing in a pot in my room. So that is not the vibe to attract your person, right? We were not there looking for that at all. And even when we met up after, like, that was not what we were looking for. But I will say that anyone that, if you do a public ayahuasca retreat, you inevitably just form a connection with these people. So especially the one that I did, it was 10 days. There's 4 ceremonies. There's tons of integration circles. You're going through all of these meaningful conversations with people, and you're living in these close quarters in the middle of the jungle with them for 10 days. And also sitting in ceremony with them, where you have those moments where you're crying, where you're puking, where you're shitting, you know, you are so vulnerable. So you inevitably get close to people in that environment as a friend at the minimum. And what's even funnier, you'll know this because I've shared it before, my first retreat, I was like, I want a private room. I don't want to be friends with anyone. I'm not coming here to be friends. I don't want the like huggy, touchy-feely stuff. I just want to come in here and sit in my shit and be depressed and do my thing. And what came out of it was so, so different than what I thought I was going into. And he was one of those things, right? There was a lot of resistance against it. Like, whoa, this is not at all what I want right now. And same with him. But needless to say, like I said, this is why I want to bring him on the podcast, also because he is probably the only person I've dated that I am legitimately good friends with now, like good friends. He's probably coming to our wedding good friends, and is for me that feels very rare. I don't know about you. I mean, there are exes I have that I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I wish them well. I genuinely feel love and fondness towards them, and I hope they find happiness and love and all these things, but I have zero desire to talk to you. I don't feel any need to stay in touch with you. Him and I, we realized that that soul connection, that love that we had, was really a deep, deep friendship. And we kind of just had to like date first to figure that out. So it was kind of in reverse, I guess. But going through this mushroom ceremony with him, and it was actually his first time ever experiencing mushrooms, and just being able to go through this experience with anyone. So at the time, we weren't dating, we weren't romantically involved that way, but just sharing that space with anyone was a huge step for me. And I really think that part of the reason why I felt comfortable doing that with him was because we had gone through this ayahuasca retreat together. Like I said, he had already seen me pissing in a bucket and my leg rotting off. You know, it's like there, it couldn't get worse than that. Surely it couldn't get worse. And I think, you know, something about his particular energy, to where he's a man, he's also a very kind of like manly man, in the sense that he's freaking tall. I don't know how tall, he's 6'6" or something, over a foot taller than me easily, and is pretty ripped. So he's like a tall, big, sturdy dude, used to play Division I basketball, like just to paint a picture. But at the same time, he has this feminine softness. He's a really good listener. He's like, he grew up with a single mom and a sister, so he's so feminine too. And that's, for me, it was kind of the combination of both of those things. I just felt really safe. So on a physical level, I'm like, okay, if anything happens, you can fuck shit up right now because you're a beast. But on an emotional level, I feel totally safe and held and heard here. And he has a softness to him. So I think those things just were really comforting to me. And there was a point in my ceremony that I went through it. You know, it was hard. It was dark for me. And I didn't feel this need to like rush through it to make him feel comfortable. And that was a huge, huge step for me. And just being able to share that whole experience, it went over the course of I don't even know how many hours. And to be able to share that with anyone was really, really healing for me as I'm working on true vulnerability. You know, because even this, it's like I'm talking into a mic, there's a blank screen in front of me. Yes, thousands of people are going to hear this, but there's this disconnect, I think, through the screen, through the mic, through this medium and the way it's going out versus real vulnerability. I'm sitting in the biggest trauma that I've ever experienced and like reliving it and letting some person see me in what feels like the most horrendous broken state. You know, like that to me is real vulnerability versus just sharing stories and sharing hardship in hindsight when I'm in it and I feel that stripped raw nakedness and I'm letting someone see me in that. It's like, oh, that's huge. And like I said, I didn't even realize until earlier today, holy shit, that's still to this day, the only time I've done a ceremony and been with someone else. So that was around mid-2019. That was around June, May or June 2019. And as you all know, I met Alex later that year, and pre-pandemic. So this is actually right before the pandemic. Alex is a Pisces, as most of you know, so her birthday is in March. And when we say March 2020, everyone goes, oh, you know, like everyone knows what happened on March 2020. And her birthday weekend was right before the world shut down. We had a small gathering on Saturday, because even at that time, it was still kind of weird. Like, should we get together? I mean, the bars are still open, everything's still open, but I don't know. I didn't drink. I hadn't drank for a couple of years at that point. Her and her friends did, but it felt weird to go out and do something. So we ended up just renting an Airbnb. She was still living in San Francisco at the time. We rented an Airbnb on the coast in a suburb of San Francisco, so it was quieter, and just had a gathering of no more than 10 people, maybe even 8. I don't remember the exact count. And just decided to stay there. I cooked dinner for everyone. They brought, I think some people brought wine, some people brought Can, which is a really good THC drink if you haven't had it. And because I had cooked this big dinner for everyone, I was like, oh, I'm gonna make mushroom chocolates. So this is me putting myself on blast, because this was me letting my ego and letting my mind getting the best of myself, okay? So this is March 2020. I have survived 2019. 2019 for me was that dark night of the soul. It was hard. I went through all the shit, and in that time was really when I became very connected to mushrooms, figured out my rhythm with microdosing through a lot of trial and error, had my first ceremony alone, and my second ceremony with someone. I had drunk ayahuasca 4 times. I'm feeling so fucking cool, you guys. I'm like, yeah. I mean, I, you know, totally this air of, oh, yeah, I can handle that. Like, I do all this stuff. I'm so cool. And I just have to laugh at myself looking back, because I just got checked so hard. And even though I'm not like walking around shouting it from the rooftops, like, I've done all this stuff, I feel so cool about myself, I felt it internally when I brought up this idea of the mushroom chocolates, okay? Because Alex was like, okay, yeah, just make sure they're a microdose. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. Because like I said, I've never measured, even just cooking in general, it's not just a mushroom thing. Cooking in general, I don't measure. I'm like, I just don't want the measuring cup to stunt my creativity, you know? I'm so dramatic about it, when it's like, maybe you would stop ruining stuff if you just fucking measured for once. But no, I'm like, I trust myself. I trust my intuition. I don't need to measure things. And sometimes that is true. Sometimes there is truth in that, and you can create and you can taste test. And, you know, I'm talking more about cooking now than adding in mushrooms, but a lot of the times there is truth to that. And I love just being in that creative flow in the kitchen. Other times, saying that you're trusting your intuition as a kind of egoic way to get out of doing what might actually be the best for yourself and for the group is not really intuitive, okay? So that was happening. I made the chocolates also. This is a problem in general I have with any sort of edible. If it tastes really good, I'm like, I love food so much. I don't want it to taste that good, because then I'm gonna keep want to eat the thing. And the chocolates were bomb. They were like chocolate raspberry, just really decadent and just freaking good. And I was looking at it, and I had just estimated, sprinkled some mushrooms in there. And I was like, this doesn't really look, like I said, there were 8 to 10 people there. I was like, I don't know if this is going to be enough. I'm just going to put a little more. So I added some more, put them in, let the chocolate sit overnight. And at her birthday, and keep in mind, this is also me knowing, mushrooms are not a social experience for me, ever. I go deep. I go dark. And I had kind of let my ego get in the way and thinking like, I've already done the deep, dark thing. You know, I survived 2019. I felt like I emerged on this other side, not just because I met Alex, but I felt this, I was feeling it towards the end of 2019. Like, okay, I'm really coming out on the other side of things now. Like I had mastered something, mastered mushrooms, I guess, mastered life. So I felt like I didn't need to have this, okay, it actually doesn't matter what you've already gone through. The way that this medicine works best for you is in this environment, you know, like a very private environment, not a social gathering. Also, the first time I'm meeting all of her friends. So, 2 of her best friends, we had already had a weekend together and I knew them, but the rest of the group, first time I'm meeting them, okay? And I'm coming in like, it's fine. I'm gonna be the cool girl who made everyone dinner and then made these really cool mushroom chocolates. I'm so edgy and fucking cool, right? Like, that's really what was going on there. And that is the opposite of how, at least for me, some people can get away with this. For some people, mushrooms are super social. And maybe they don't have this whole experience that I have, and maybe that works for them, but for me, not the case. So serve the mushroom chocolates, and everyone's kind of like, ooh, you know, like giggly, like, oh, this is cool, and like nervous. I'm like, no, you guys, it's fine. Like, there's barely anything in there. And I'm just trying to be the cool girl. And we're playing this game. I don't even know. We're playing some game, split up in teams, and all of a sudden my stomach is like, it makes this gurgling sound, and I was like, oh, fuck. And I thought, okay, maybe it's because usually I don't really eat dinner that late, and, you know, it was like kind of a big decadent dinner, and so I thought maybe that was why. And this is also a common purge that I have with mushrooms, is I will usually shit at least once before the trip starts, sometimes multiple times. Like, it just kind of clears everything out of my system, and then the trip really kicks in. So I had that feel, that gurgle in my stomach, and my stomach was really bloated, and I was like, oh God. So I go to the bathroom, release everything, and I was like, okay, like, I definitely am feeling something, but it's fine. I'm kind of just like talking myself through it. I go back up, keep playing the game, and I was like, I have to go to the bathroom again. So I go to the bathroom again, and that happens 3 more times. And oh my God. So one of whatever we were playing, it was some drawing, some acting, like a little bit of everything. And one of the cards was Barbara Streisand. And our friend was trying to describe Barbara Streisand. I think she couldn't, you know, say certain words, and she was trying to describe her or whatever. And she keeps talking about her hands. Like, I have these beautiful hands. I'm known for my hands. And none of us guessed it. And at the end, she was like, it was Barbara Streisand, duh. And we're like, what the fuck? Like, who knows anything about Barbara Streisand's hands? She pulls them up. She Googles them and pulls them up. And I'm looking at these hands. And this is when I really knew that I was starting to trip, because I felt like the hands were so evil. You know, like they were just looking at me like they were going to reach out through the screen and grab my face or something. I was like, oh my gosh, those hands. And at the same time, my stomach is gargling again. I was like, I have to go to the bathroom. I never came back from that last bathroom trip. Let's just say that. All right, everyone, we're just going to take a quick pause and give some love to today's sponsor, Chaco's Footwear. Designed by River Guides in 1989 and still the best sports sandal to ever set foot outdoors. Meet the Z Sandals, the iconic sandal developed for whitewater and now enjoyed by outdoor enthusiasts all over the world. It takes its name from the Z-shaped straps that cross over and wrap the foot for a 360-degree adjustment and a customized fit. Durably constructed out of only 8 component parts and a fully repairable for long-term value. Ari, Chaco. Plus, they come with Chaco's Love Seat PU footbed for all-day comfort and support, and feature Chaco Grip rubber for the best performing classic outsole to date. It's Chaco's first innovation and the last sandal you'll ever need. What makes Z sandals unique is their long-term value. Chaco's ReChaco program allows you to send in their Chacos for repair. This speaks to the durability of the sandals and consumers' deep connection to the brand. I personally can say that I love my Chacos so much for any outdoor activity. You have an opportunity to get yours at a discounted rate with the code KAYLA10. That's KAYLA10, KAYLA, getting a little discount on your Chacos today. Let's get back to the show. I go to the bathroom, and keep in mind, this whole time, so I cut the chocolates into squares, I had had half of a square, and I was watching everyone else. Most other people had like 3 squares or more, so I had had, I mean, a fraction of what most other people took, and this is now fast forwarding through the whole night. I think that the whole tray of chocolates ended up getting cleared. They stayed up there all night. They had so much fun. Everyone's laughing. They're socializing. They're playing games all night long. I'm down in the bathroom. Our room was downstairs, and I'm down in the bathroom literally just like first sat in the shower for a really long time. For me, being in water is so soothing for me when I'm going through a trip. Not the best choice environmentally. I recognize that. I own that, okay? I was just trying to stay afloat. After sitting in the shower for a really long time, where I'm literally just like crying and going through it, like so dark, the darkest stuff. I get out of the shower and I'm sitting on the bed, just like, okay, I gotta go up there. And I'm laying in the fetal position on the bed, staring at the wall. And we're staying in an Airbnb, so it's not like, you know, the most beautifully decorated place, but there's this kind of like cheesy painting of flowers on a wall. The flowers and I had a conversation for at least 2 hours, like fully talking to a painting for 2 hours. That's where I was at, okay? That's where I was at, and everyone upstairs is just like totally fine. They felt giggly, they felt buzzy, they felt, you know, a little something. No one was even close to being in a trip at all. And I had a fraction the amount of everyone else, and I just got my ass handed to me. And the messages that were coming through very clearly was exactly what I was saying before, putting me in my place. Like, you know that mushrooms are not a social experiment for you. Like, why did you think that this was going to be okay? Why did you think that, essentially, why were you leading with your ego so hard on this? Have you learned nothing from plant medicine? And I had to learn the lesson the hard way. Like, it was brutal. It was not necessary. There were some times where I was going through that same loop of past trauma stuff, but it was more just like extreme discomfort of probably one of the ways I could describe it is that ego death that people talk about. And it was not pretty. It was not fun. All the while, it's my new girlfriend's birthday. I'm meeting all of her friends for the first time. And so I also just felt really bad. Like, I'm missing her whole birthday because I can, like, even if I wanted to, I cannot put one foot in front of the other and walk up the stairs right now and go up there. It is not an option for me. I'm missing her whole birthday, so I feel bad about that. Her friends probably think that I'm crazy because I made them all mushroom chocolates and then disappeared because I can't handle them. And this is another part of the ego check for me, is that because of this, I do have a decent amount of experience with psychedelics. It's this feeling of like, oh yeah, it's fine. Like, follow my lead, you know, like I know what I'm doing. And a true leader, whether they are a shaman or teacher or whatever it is, a true leader isn't leading egoically that way. And especially if it is someone that is facilitating any sort of plant medicine experience, they're not like, well, I've done it so many times, so it's actually fine. Like, I know what I'm doing. Because it just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. It doesn't matter how many times you've done it. Every experience is so individual. And the chemistry that each person has with each plant is so individual that it's not at all about numbers and frequency of times that you've experienced it. And I kind of had that air about me of like, you guys, it's fine. I made these mushroom chocolates, but it's fine. I totally know what I'm doing. I've done this so many times, you know? And it was like, no, you haven't. And you don't know what you're doing. And you need to check yourself right now. And that was exactly what happened. I got checked really hard and it was really difficult. It's hard to say because the high school trip, I don't remember as clearly, but I would almost say it was worse than that. Not worse in the sense, I've said this before, I don't necessarily even believe in a bad trip because a really uncomfortable, hard, painful, difficult trip, I don't think is necessarily bad, but it can be hard and difficult and painful and all those things in that experience. So when I say it was worse than the high school one, I just meant discomfort wise, it did feel worse. And that's probably because I wasn't drinking and smoking and stuff too. So that was only last year. And that was an accidental. That was the other thing, is like, I didn't go into it knowing, okay, I'm going to take a full dose of mushrooms. This is how I'm going to ground down. I'm going into it with intention. So it was kind of like my high school self coming back again, but in this other form, right? This other ego form was showing up there. Whereas the two experiences I had that were powerful and meaningful and peaceful, even though they were hard, it was because I went into them with so much humility and so much intention and so much awareness of knowing, like, this is exactly what I'm doing, right? This I think part of the other reason it was really hard is because it felt like it came out of nowhere. Like, whoa, I was not planning for this, right? I was not planning on tripping balls today and talking to a painting for 2 hours. This was not part of the plan. So it just really put me in my place in so many different ways. But the aftermath of it, the next day, I felt incredible again because I was like, oh, I needed that. Like, I needed that ass kicking because I was getting a little bit too big for my britches. You know what I mean? And so for me, even though it was difficult and all the things, it was like, whoa, I had this new also reverence for particularly mushrooms. Even though I had had those big experiences with mushrooms in the past, they were still so maybe, I don't know if it was because I hadn't done it that much or what it was, but there was something about it that I didn't really recognize, I guess, how sensitive I am to psychedelics in general, but particularly mushrooms until that experience. And especially when I went up the next morning and saw like, whoa, the whole tray of chocolates is gone. And I know for a fact I only had this much. Like, how is it possible that I had that experience for hours on end downstairs and everyone else had five times as much as me and they are totally fine? Like, okay, I really have to be, it's not about being careful in like a fearful way, but just having reverence, I think is the best way to put it. I really need to have more reverence for this experience, especially with mushrooms. But it did scare me a little bit. It did scare me. I will say that. I was like, ooh, if that can happen, if that deep of a trip can happen out of close to, you know, nothing, a very, very small amount, how am I ever going to have a full dose again? I just kind of felt like, oh, I don't even know. I don't want to fuck with these. Like, this is similar to how I felt after the high school experience where, you know, I just wanted to push it away. And I kind of felt somewhere in between for the rest of that year. So this particular batch of mushrooms, I continued to work with on a very infrequent and very, very small microdosing level. And was really getting to know this particular batch of mushrooms that we had. And that's when I was like, whoa, like the personality of these mushrooms is strong. That's who was talking to me through the painting that night. Like, I fully was in communication with the spirit of these particular mushrooms. And I could feel how strong they were because when I was microdosing even the tiniest amount, their presence came through just as strong. So I was like, whoa, okay, maybe it isn't even all mushrooms, maybe it's this particular one. Like, I'm kind of trying to figure this out too, and this is in COVID, okay? So we got time to figure this stuff out. You have time to talk to mushrooms and paintings all day if that's what you want to do. That's not what I was doing all of COVID, but I just had this time and this space to really kind of understand in a different way, really connecting with the spirit of a plant. And this was, again, post ayahuasca. People talk about this all the time with ayahuasca, and I had the experience of myself with ayahuasca where I met the spirit of the plant and I'm talking to her and she's very clearly a her, and you're like, how do I know it's a her? It's not about being in a woman's body or anything actually gendered. It's an energetic thing and all this strange stuff that doesn't make sense, but it makes total sense. It's this whole other world, right? But I still was a little bit kind of tentative about it. And for sure had zero desire to take a full dose of these mushrooms again. So all of 2020 happens. Most of 2021 happens. In May of 2021, that's when I did my second ayahuasca retreat, which again, I've shared about quite a bit. So you can always go back and listen to that episode. And you'll know that in that second retreat, that's when I was like, okay, like this is what it means to be in a relationship with a plant. That was really, really clear to me in that second retreat. And I've explained this visual before, so if you've heard it already, then sorry to repeat myself. But if you haven't, the first time that I had experienced ayahuasca and she showed up as the form of a snake, very common visual for her to show up as. But in my first retreat, first of all, she was black. She was fast and she kind of had this coy nature to her, like a little bit tricky, a little bit slippery. And I was kind of holding on to the end of her tail, and she's just whipping me through the trip. She's guiding the trip, but she's going so fast, I'm just hanging on for dear life. That's how my first ayahuasca experience felt. My second retreat, she also showed up as a snake, but this time she was white and purple. So completely different colors, very different energy. She still had this leadership to her and kind of this respect about her, of, you know, I know what the hell is up, and having this sort of reverence in her presence. But we were next to each other the whole time. And she's still guiding the trip. She would be like, do you want to go here? And I'd be like, okay. I just said yes to everything. Yes, I trust you. And then we would go there. Do you want to go here? Yes, I trust you. And she was guiding it, but we were working together. And even when I said yes to things that I didn't want to do, she was kind of like, okay, I just wanted to see what you would say. It was kind of like a test, you know? But just the difference of, okay, the first time I went through it, I was hanging on to the tail. I didn't know what was happening. I had whiplash, you know, everything was happening so fast. And the second time it was much more grounded. I could make more sense of everything. And we were sitting right next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, going through it together. And I was like, whoa, like this is a relationship. And it was so much more than a relationship to a plant. You know, this can be reflected in a lot of different relationships. And obviously my relationship with myself and my romantic relationships had drastically evolved in those 2 years in between my first and second ayahuasca experiences. So it made sense why it had shifted within my relationship with the plant as well. But that was really when something opened up even more in me, where I was like, okay, I just get now when people talk about being in relationship with a plant or dieting a certain plant, I just get it more now. I've kind of always talked to plants and trees and all life and animals, but I kind of just always thought that that's what everyone does. And that's, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people do that. And I think people think this a lot about any sort of, whether it is a gift or just a weird quirk that you have, it's kind of like, oh yeah, it's totally fine though. Everyone does that. And it's like, well, no, not everyone does that, which is fine. It's not about being normal or abnormal. It's more kind of recognizing the uniqueness about that, and that not everyone actually does get messages from plants, you know? Like, yes, a lot of people do, but maybe recognize that that's something to look at and that's important. And that became clear to me from that second ayahuasca retreat, but I still didn't really know what to make of it. And after that retreat, I was just kind of starting to connect to all sorts of plants. It doesn't have to be psychedelic. So, you know, I'm plant-based anyways. So if there is a specific food, for instance, that I'm craving a lot, it's going to be a plant because I'm plant-based. So I'm trying to connect to the energy of that plant, to the spirit of that plant, and understanding more about where that craving is coming from. Is there something about the actual energetics of this plant or the personality of this plant that I'm actually craving beyond the flavor, the nutrition, and just like getting fully out there into the woo-woo stuff, you guys, like fully out there. I know some of you are like, wait, what? You've been talking to plants for the last year? Yeah, I have. So, and just trying it. Sometimes I feel like I would get some messages back, sometimes not at all. Okay, so this brings us to 2021. And Alex goes to Peru to do her first ayahuasca retreat. And I am in Tahoe at my parents' house. And my mom is out of town. My dad and I decide to watch Fantastic Fungi. And I was like, oh, you know, highly recommend that movie. And it just totally, I had already been feeling something about mushrooms leading up to this. I don't know exactly what, but just this feeling of like, I know I want to start working with them again. I took a really long break, and recognizing that a lot of that break was coming from fear, which was different than, okay, this is, you know, intuitively what feels right. It was more of a fear-based decision, but, you know, also open to listening to that fear too. Fear isn't always a bad thing necessarily. You know, it's really kind of depends on the source of it, and not wanting to push myself to do anything before I'm ready to do it, whether it's mushrooms or anything. So we watch Fantastic Fungi, that creaks open the door. And that weekend that my mom was gone and my dad and I had a lot of quality time together, we did some hikes together, we went paddleboarding together, and we had a lot of conversations about psychedelics, about mushrooms, about ayahuasca, about my experiences, about things that we saw in Fantastic Fungi, as well as some other documentaries that we went on to watch that weekend. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I do feel ready to do another mushroom ceremony. So at this point, it had been over 2 years since my proper ceremony. It had been about a year and a half since the ass-kicking thing that happened on Alex's birthday, which I don't even count as a ceremony. It was a full dose, but it wasn't a ceremony. It was not intentional, you know, as we've already established. But it had been about a year and a half since then. And I was like, I'm scared, but I'm ready to do this. And I thought about it and I decided, okay, I want to wait for Alex to come home. Very similar to how I felt with my previous boyfriend, where I didn't want to go through the ceremony with her, because for me, mushrooms are, you know, very introspective. It is a lot of inner work for me. I'm not saying that I'll never do a ceremony with her. I'm in fact positive that we probably will at some point. But at this point, it was just very clear I needed to do it for me. And if I do it with her, especially her, because she's someone that I love and care about so much, I could easily get consumed with making sure she feels okay. That same thing I was talking about before. And knowing that I might be going through that really dark period, that's going to make her feel uncomfortable and upset and want to help me. And I'm then going to want to mask how I'm feeling so she doesn't feel uncomfortable and upset. You know, it just creates this dynamic that doesn't really let me go there all the way. But also knowing that for me, I like to have that security of knowing that someone is there. So, you know, not that that person can come in and just snap their fingers and make you stop tripping and make it all go away, but just knowing that someone is there. And okay, this is in Lake Tahoe. It's not a dangerous place at all, but just knowing, my mind tends to go down the rabbit hole of like, what if someone showed up there and a serial killer breaks in? And it just kind of takes away any of that paranoia or fear that might come in, which I know not everyone has, but I definitely have that, especially when I'm feeling vulnerable. And I feel very vulnerable when I'm in those altered states. So I'm not ever going to be someone that's going to just like eat mushrooms and go out in the forest by myself. There's no way. I wouldn't enjoy it because I would be too paranoid the whole time and I wouldn't fully be able to go there. And that's probably also partially a woman thing, you know, like we are used to having our guard up when we're in a more vulnerable state. So I wanted to wait for Alex to get home and to do it on a day that she could be there, and not, I didn't want her to like just sit there and watch me, but very similar to the structure I had with my previous boyfriend, that she could do her thing. She's living her life. It was actually a Thursday, so she was working, but if I needed her, she could come and just sit there and hold my hand, or just knowing that if someone does knock on the door, that she's got it, you know, and I just don't have to worry about anything. That's really, really important for me. I don't have to worry about any of the other things that might be going on around me. I can just fully immerse myself into the experience. So she wasn't coming home for about two more weeks by the point that I had decided this, which allowed me to also look at my calendar and see, okay, when will be the best time for this? And that's how I landed on that Thursday. So I think at that point, that was about 3 weeks from the point that I decided to do it. And the following Friday, I already had a therapy appointment scheduled. So I was like, okay, this is perfect. Like, could I have a better integration circle experience, right? So that I already felt really supported on the other side of it, which was great. And because I had those 3 weeks leading up to it, I was able to get really clear on my intention, the same way that I would before an ayahuasca ceremony, of just grounding down getting a little deeper inside of myself, maybe upping my meditation practice, maybe upping my journaling practice, getting clear about what my intention is, you know, getting clear about what I am really seeking and what I'm running from, and just getting honest with myself going into it. The ceremony starts before you take anything. And having those 3 weeks to do that and being able to enter into it very intentionally, that's really the first time I had that big of a lead up to a mushroom ceremony before. Because even the other two that I did intentionally, they were much more last minute. You know, within a couple of days, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, this would be a good day to do it. Boom, and now it's happening. And this 3 weeks, it was a really, really beautiful process. Also because there was fear there. And so I was able to just feel into it and understand it and be with it. And it was all part of the ceremony itself. So we end up going with that structure. I worked a half day that day. I think I was teaching a course in the early part of the day, and then I knew I'm gonna have, you know, something light to eat because it's probably gonna come out one end or the other, and then I'm gonna, you know, go into my experience. I made a playlist, and this is a purely Trevor Hall playlist because I think we can all agree he's an angel in a man's body. And his music is so soothing to me when I'm in that state. It's like the only thing that I can listen to. So made a playlist and just kind of set everything up. Again, just had like my cozy area and had a bowl there ready in case I do throw up, and I'm just ready. And before I took anything, I did a yoga practice and then I did a pretty long meditation. And in my meditation, I was just like, okay, I really want to connect with the spirit of this plant. And this is the same batch of mushrooms from the previous year. We've had these mushrooms for a long time. So it was the same guys. And I dropped in really quickly. Again, hadn't taken anything. Nothing. This is just meditation, connect to the spirit of the plant, and right away just start getting messages that are like, first of all, it was very clear, oh shit, you are masculine. You know, whereas I say ayahuasca, for instance, is very clearly feminine. I still am unclear. I don't know. Are all mushrooms masculine? I don't know. This particular batch of mushrooms we had, I'm like, oh, you are masculine. Oh, that's why I'm so afraid of you. Oh, this is all going to be around healing my relationship with men. Like all of that became clear, just like boom, boom, boom in this meditation as I'm connected to this plant. And, you know, very interesting because I had had a similar experience with ayahuasca earlier that year where it was all about really connecting to the divine feminine and healing my relationship and understanding of what the divine feminine meant and feeling that in myself and connecting to Mother Earth and just the most primal feminine experience. And this was like, oh, okay, yeah, I have a lot of trauma for men. So I have a lot of resistance around being in this vulnerable, intimate state with a masculine presence at all. Like, that's why I'm so afraid of you. That's why the bitch slap last year on Alex's birthday felt so much worse than any bitch slap I've had from ayahuasca. And just already, this is before I've taken anything. And like, okay, this is gonna be brutal. Because healing that relationship with the masculine, I know has been, you know, a sore spot for me for a long time. And also interestingly, when I come out of the meditation, my stomach, same thing, it's like making that gurgling noise. I completely empty everything out and I'm like, I haven't even taken anything yet. And I was almost like, maybe this is just a sign that I don't actually need to take anything, and maybe this is the lesson. And I can just kind of feel myself talking myself out of it, like, yep, yeah, maybe this is the lesson and I don't need to even eat any mushrooms because I already talked to them and I've already had this purge experience, and and you know, just kind of making up one excuse after the other when I knew my gut is telling me, I mean, yes, that can be true, and you've learned something from this, but this isn't the experience, and there is more. So I was like, okay, fuck it. And I just did it, ate them, and went on quite a journey. And one that was, it was fucking difficult at times. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, it was beautiful. It was so magical. And now I feel like we're one and we're so connected. No. Well, no and yes. That, of course, you always feel to a degree with psychedelics. But it was brutal. It was hard. It was painful. I was purging. And there was a point that I had called Alex in, and she was still working, so she just was listening in on a call. Her headphones are in, and she's just, I'm in our bed and just kind of like going through it, just like I said, moving around, like I'm in a lot of pain, I can't get comfortable, and I have a lot of body purges at the time too, and she could see it. A certain part of my body would just start spasming, and in that part of my body I can feel all the shit that's stored there. And so it's painful. You're feeling it, but you're also reliving all the stuff that has happened to those particular groups of cells, and then you're releasing it. And because of that, that's for me why physically these experiences tend to be pretty painful. And Alex can see all of this happening too. She's not altered at all. She can see everything happening, and she's just holding my hand. She was sitting on the ground. I'm on the bed, and my hand is hanging over the side of the bed, and she's sitting on the ground just holding my hand. And even she said at one point, she's like, I seriously thought you took something else. Like, I've never seen anything like this from mushrooms. I'm like, yeah. And this is part of, I think, my whole process and relationship with mushrooms is just owning the fact that this particular plant for me is not something to take lightly. It's not something that I can just be like, yeah, mushroom ceremony here, there, every month. Like, no, these are big experiences for me. I need time and space to prepare, then to participate, and then to integrate. And what I experience when I do have a full mushroom ceremony is, it sounds like what a lot of people experience with something as big as ayahuasca. And so it's just owning that in myself. I think I had a lot of resistance around that, again, egoically, of like, I've done these things so many times, or I have such a high tolerance, I can handle it, I'm so tough, I'm so strong. And because for me, all psychedelics, and especially plant medicines, have really been about softening and being more heart-centered, and from that being more vulnerable and owning sensitivity and owning more feminine kind of qualities, it has taken this many years to get that to be like, yeah, you know, I only need a really little bit of mushrooms, and it really takes me into this place, and I'm super sensitive to them, and that's okay. Being sensitive to something or anything or anyone, or just being sensitive at all, isn't a bad thing. It can actually be super fucking useful, because in that sensitivity, you can really feel into nuance and subtleties, and feel into, you know, the finesse of those really fine tune moments of energy that if you're moving really quickly through things, you can't. So, you know, the other funny thing that happened during this whole experience is that Sandhya was with me the whole time. So I also realized that this is the first time I've ever done a ceremony with an animal. And I mean, Alex says this all the time. She's never seen, the connection that Cindy and I have is pretty uncanny, and she's definitely another soulmate of mine for sure. Alex is like, I've never seen anything like this with any other person and any dog before, and I am very much a dog person. Most people would say I've been like this with every dog I've had. I swear, I speak dog. Like, I am such an animal lover. They get me, I get them. There's that happening. But also, specifically with her, we have a deep ass connection. So, I actually didn't want to pull her into the experience because animals, they know what's going on, you know? So, I'm like, I don't want to do that to her. She chose to come in and hopped up on the bed with me right away because she did know exactly what was going on and just laid with me on the bed. And so I told you Alex is sitting on the ground and she's holding my hand and she gets up to go back. She's like, you know, are you good? Can I go back to work now? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. So she goes to give me a hug. And when she goes to give me a hug, Sandia jumps on me and her whole body is, because I'm kind of curled up in the fetal position, so her body is covering the length of my body. Her front legs are around my shoulders and her back legs are like squeezing my legs. So she's covering my whole body and she will not let Alex touch me. Like, she's just protecting me so hard. Like, no, this is kind of what it felt like she was saying is no, she needs to stay in her own bubble right now. Like, she's in her own experience. And we've talked about this before on the podcast of this idea of holding space and how people who are holding space in a ceremony or in a class, they're really not there to touch you because that touching can take you out of the experience, right? So sometimes just being there with you and allowing you to go through the thing is actually the best thing that they can do. Because when they touch, even, you know, our natural instinct is if someone's crying, hug them, comfort them, touch them, make them feel better. And even if the intention is there to want to help, sometimes that breaks the experience for them and they're not able to actually go as deep as they could have gone if they hadn't been touched. And that's what, I mean, Sandia is touching me, her whole body is on me, but she refused to let Alex touch any part of me. She was just like, nope, I'm holding the space here. I'm keeping mom's bubble fully safe. You can't touch her. She would not let anyone come near me for the rest of that day and the day after. It was just like, she was almost reminding me, you need to be in your own kind of energetic bubble right now, you know? Don't contaminate it with all of the bullshit. So that was just funny. I mean, we'd never seen her act this way before. And Alex actually took a picture of it because it was just so ridiculous. So maybe I'll post it on my stories or something. You guys can look out for that. But that whole experience happened and it was huge. It was a lot. You know, it really went through this kind of process of, like I said, healing my relationship with the masculine and my relationship with men and feeling of safety around men and fear with men and all of that tied up in a lot of a variety of different traumas, that some of which I've talked about publicly, some of which I haven't talked at all. And you know, going through that over and over and over can be fucking hard, you know? So that's part of the difficulty. But for me, when I come out the other side of that hardship, I'm like, I feel like I can all of a sudden really take a full breath. And I do feel lighter. I've released a lot. I've worked through a lot. I understand myself better. And now I can take all of these lessons into my life until the next ceremony. If there ever is a next ceremony, you know, staying open enough that it's like, maybe that was it. Who knows? I'm going to just stay in this place of trust. Obviously, I've learned the lesson of keeping my ego in check, not letting that lead the way. And, you know, rather than being in a constant state of ceremony, because that can be alluring and that can be this other mode of escapism where it's like, yeah, if you're constantly altered and you're constantly living in this vibrant, altered universe, that can be really attractive. But then you're not, like, what's the point of getting all these downloads and talking to your higher self and talking to aliens and talking to your guides and whoever the hell you're talking to? What is the point of that if you're not bringing those lessons into your daily life? Because our purpose here is to be human. That's why we're here. We're all in human bodies. So the purpose is to connect to whatever higher self, being, power, whatever it is you believe in, and then take those lessons and apply them to being human so that we can be better, kinder, more loving, more patient, more compassionate humans. That is my constant lesson. I don't know about you. So that's what I've been doing over the last few months, has just been integrating that experience and also recognizing that part of that integration process for me is a little bit more privacy, which is why, like I said, haven't shared any of it until now. It's been several months, haven't shared any of it because I'm like, I just kind of want things to percolate. And there have been some really huge things that have happened since then. That ceremony ended up being this kind of marker point of, you know, when really big events happen and it's like before this and after this, because that was just this very clear line in the sand. That was what that ceremony was for so many reasons. I didn't know that that's what it was going to be at the time, but that's what it ended up being. And also because of that, things have just been moving nonstop. And so I've been struggling to not just have space, but to prioritize space for myself for this integration process. And I just really want to emphasize the importance of integration of anything, you know, whether it's plant medicine or even a yoga class. If you've taken a yoga class that is, you know, you're crying in Shavasana after, that's because you've had some kind of release happen. I can't speak to exactly what it was, you know, but something has happened. There's energy moving in you and that's coming out in the form of tears. And if you don't take a little bit of time, maybe that's a couple minutes every day, maybe that's one dedicated hour each week, you know, whatever works with your schedule. But if you don't take a little bit of time to actually let all that dust settle and fall and feel and understand like what did just happen, then at least in my experience, sometimes it ends up expressing itself through sickness or through extreme irritability, or it's like something feels stuck because all of this, you know, like a snow globe or like a dust storm, like I was saying before, like everything gets shook up and everything is floating around and there's movement happening and it's like, whoa, this is cool, this is crazy. But then it never really settles. It just kind of stays in that shook up place. And when the dust settles or when the snow settles or whatever, you can see more clearly instead of staying in that kind of frenzied state. And that's why, you know, I noticed myself continuing to say like, oh, I just don't have the space. Space was a big one. Right after that is when we got evacuated for the fires. And we were sharing a 900 square foot house with four chicks and two large dogs, which is not a very big space for that many people and creatures. So not a lot of space for 2 weeks. And then we were bouncing around from Airbnb to Airbnb because we didn't know if we were going to be able to get back in the house. And we were evacuated. And is the house even still there? And there was so much uncertainty and living out of a suitcase. And it was a stressful, hectic time. And at the same time, the construction at Still Salty explodes. And we're, you know, going hundreds of thousands of dollars over budget. And all this stuff is happening. And it's like, what? It's just a whirlwind. And then being in Nicaragua and living in the middle of a construction site with where there is literally zero peace because you're in the middle of a construction site. And I kept saying the phrase, you know, I just don't have time. I don't have space for this. And recognizing if I'm saying that a lot, like how true is that? Because realistically, we can always create more space. You know, I was in the middle and still am at the time of recording this of a very hectic season. But I was using that hectic season as an excuse to not integrate and to keep all of that hectic, chaotic energy high. And recognizing that even something as extreme as, for instance, living in a construction site, where literally like you are placed in the middle of a construction site, guys show up there sometimes as early as 5:30 in the morning, and they will work until 5:30 or 6 at night, that I can still always create space for myself, like little pockets of peace, even if it is a 10-minute walk down the beach, even if it's a 5-minute walk just to put my feet in the water, feel the sand, close my eyes, connect to myself, connect to an intention, anything, but creating these little micro moments, because maybe in my pace of life, I didn't have time for that full hour, 2 hour long practice that makes me feel really good and really grounded. I don't have the time for that currently. So how can I create these little pockets of peace? I also feel it a lot when I'm creating a meal really intentionally and really lovingly. I feel it, you know, when I make sure to watch the sunset and make sure to watch the sunrise, and just connect to myself and to nature. I feel it when I put my hands onto the trunks of really big trees. I feel it when my feet are bare on the ground. I feel it when I am playing with puppies and dogs and any animals, and just taking that time and creating that time and creating that space and that pause has been so important for me. Because in those first few months after, it was like, whoa, the dust isn't settling and everything is so chaotic. And a huge, huge lesson that I learned is I can only control so much, of course, but what I can do is create space. Even if that's just mental space, you know, I can clear out some of the cobwebs, some of the clutter, some of the noise. I can create space in my mind so that I can use that space to integrate, to let the dust settle, to understand the lessons, so that I'm not in this confused, chaotic state. And I think that's when, you know, having something like therapy is also really grounding. Having friend groups that you can talk about exactly what you went through in a ceremony or exactly what you experienced in a really deep yoga class or just anything. But having people that you can talk to about this stuff is super, super helpful. So, you know, that's what I've been working on, and just keeping space to continually integrate so that the purpose is really there, you know? So the purpose wasn't just like, oh, I just had this crazy trip and I talked to mushrooms, cool. Because what's the point of that if we're not taking these deeper lessons and applying them to our lives? So, you know, I'm not gonna say that it's been easy, but I will say that it has been a constant practice. And what I did learn from that particular ceremony has been so relevant to everything that's been going on in my life since then. It felt kind of blindsiding, all of the stuff that came up. And it was like, oh, wow. But it's also coming at the perfect time, because I just went through this whole experience. Like, I feel like I now have these tools to navigate it a little bit more clearly. So, you know, at this point, my relationship with mushrooms feels very full circle from that first experience in high school. I feel like I've definitely healed my relationship with mushrooms, and I'm on that way to healing my relationship with the kind of masculine energy behind them. Still can't say that I'm there 100%, but I'm working on it. And at this point, just as I mentioned before, just continuing to trust about it and not making a plan about it and not needing it to be like, how many times have you done mushrooms? This is how many times I have. And I need to, you know, be microdosing in order to be creative, and, you know, not leaning into any of these substances, any of these plants, any of these medicines as a crutch or as a way to escape, but working with them to better understand myself, and working with them with enough space and breathing room in between to fully integrate in between experiences rather than just jumping from one altered state to the next. So these are all, I think, important takeaways for anyone, you know, whatever it may be for you, whether it is mushrooms, whether it is coffee, whether it is alcohol, you know, these things that are also legal. Just kind of looking at it, how much of a hold does this substance or does this plant or this medicine or whatever you want to label it, how much of a hold does this thing have over me? And am I using it to run away, or am I using it to run into myself and to better understand myself? How am I better understanding myself? How am I creating space to integrate? What is integration? You know, these are all really good questions to ask yourself before you consider doing anything like I just talked about, so that you can feel as supported as possible after the fact. I hope that this was just as much of a trip for you as it was for me. I feel like going down this memory lane was quite the ride. So I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that answered your questions, and I hope that any of the choices that you make moving forward are really with your utmost care and love for yourself. Thank you all so much for being here. I will see you next week. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Walk Home Podcast. If you enjoyed it, it would mean so much to me if you took a few minutes to subscribe, rate, and review. Don't forget that if you email us a screenshot of your rating and review, we'll send you 2 specially crafted yoga classes as a thank you for your support. If you think that this particular topic would resonate with friends, family, or loved ones, please don't forget to share it with them. We love being tagged on social media. You can find us at The Walk Home Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And if you want to listen to us ad-free, then you can always support us through Patreon at patreon.com/The Walk Home Pod. See you next week.